Inside Florida Politics. The Essential Podcast, powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett in West Palm Beach, Florida, happy to report that the band is back together. Rejoining the podcast after 1 week absence is a tanned and rested Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor, Zach Anderson.
Hey, George.
And from our studio in the historic Florida Press Center in Tallahassee, a not as tan and definitely not rested Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief, John Kennedy.
Hiya, George.
All right. Well, since our last podcast, Special Counsel Robert Mueller has completed his report. And while the report itself hasn't been made public, we do have Attorney General William Barr's summary of it. Not surprisingly, Republicans and Democrats have taken different views on what it all means. We will discuss some Florida reactions to it, including one from a part-time Palm Beach resident that one of our reporters caught up with before he boarded Air Force One recently. Also, remember back in the Republican primary for governor last year when Ron DeSantis body slammed Adam Putnam on immigration and an enforcement tool called E-Verify? Well, John Kennedy will give us a little political science 101 explanation of what's happening with E-Verify now that DeSantis is in office. And in another immigration-related matter, Zach Anderson will tell us the latest controversy connected to the so-called Sanctuary Cities bill that's moving through the legislature. But first, I think I hear some kind of funky royalty-free music playing. When you hear that music, you know it's time for our Pick a Number segment. That's the portion of the podcast where each of us puts forward a number, and then later on we explain what that number means in Florida politics. Zach Anderson, back on the podcast. Why don't you go ahead and give us a number, please?
Glad to be back, George, and I'm going to throw out a 60 today.
60 for Zach Anderson in Sarasota. John Kennedy, what about your number?
George, I'm coming in with a 4 today.
Number 4 for John Kennedy. Ordinarily, we encourage people to take notes during the podcast. You're probably familiar with that. But, you know, I'm going to say we'll just mention the numbers at the end. So no need to take notes. Leave your hands free. And my number is 89. So just to review very quickly, lowest to highest, John Kennedy with a number 4. Zach Anderson with the number 60, and George Bennett, that's me, with a number 89. You want to hang on to the end of the podcast, and we will explain what each of those numbers means in Florida politics. But let's get straight to our lineup. While President Donald Trump was here in Florida last weekend, Robert Mueller concluded his nearly two-year Russian collusion investigation and delivered a report to Attorney General William Barr in Washington. And then 2 days later, as Trump was preparing to leave Palm Beach, Barr released a summary of the Mueller report, highlighting a couple of key points. First, there would be no new indictments. Second, on the question of Russian collusion, Barr quoted Mueller as saying, quote, "The investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities." And third kind of key point in the Barr summary of the Mueller report was on the question of whether President Trump had obstructed justice during the process. And Barr said that Mueller didn't draw a conclusion on that question, and he quoted Mueller saying, "While this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him." First, here is some audio that Palm Beach Post reporter Hannah Morse got of President Trump on the tarmac at Palm Beach International Airport shortly after Barr released his summary of the Mueller report. Here is the president's take on it.
"There was no collusion with Russia. There was no obstruction, and none whatsoever. And it was a complete and total exoneration."
That is President Trump in West Palm Beach, Florida, with a little wind noise and Air Force One engine noise in the background there. So that was his take on the Mueller report, and he's been reiterating it ever since. Well, not surprisingly, Democrats see it a little differently. First, they say, and actually a lot of Republicans agree with them on this point, that the full Mueller report, rather than just the Barr summary, needs to be released. And, you know, remember, Democrats won control of the House, so they have the power to keep this issue alive in some of the oversight committees. And there are three Florida Democrats, for example, on the House Judiciary Committee, Ted Deutch of Boca Raton, Val Demings of Orlando, and Debbie Mukersell Powell of Miami. And all three of them, after the Mueller report or the Barr summary came out, all three of them said that the questions about obstruction need further examination. And another Florida Democrat I talked to is Congresswoman Lois Frankel of West Palm Beach. And her district actually includes Mar-a-Lago. And here is her initial take on the Mueller investigation.
I would say my overwhelming thought is the report needs to be made public as soon as possible.
Okay, so she's definitely on the make it public bandwagon. And I asked her, you know, until the report itself comes out, whether she trusts Attorney General Barr in his summary, whether you know, she's satisfied that the Attorney General gave a complete and accurate summary of what's in the Mueller report. And here's what Frankel said to that.
I have a suspicion that if the report was really favorable to the president, we would have seen it already. So I'm going to have to hold my judgment on what other conduct may be discussed in that report that may be unfavorable to the president.
So I think that's typical of a lot of Democrats in Congress, that they are still not satisfied that that the whole story is out there and still holding open the possibility that there's you know, some unfavorable things about Trump in the report that they want to see released. Frankel is a liberal and has been very critical of President Trump. But this last clip, you know, she seemed to have some mixed feelings about the amount of attention that her party has devoted to Mueller and Russia compared to other items on the Democratic agenda. Here's what she said about that.
Although I do think investigating whether or not a president colludes with the Russians is an important investigation. I do think that this Mueller, the whole Mueller investigation, and the has taken almost all the oxygen out of the room and out of the media. And the Trump administration is doing so many awful things to healthcare, to women, to our foreign policy, to that. It gets lost every single day. So I'm hoping that more attention can be given to some of the everyday issues that people care about. Not that.
So there you have Lois Frankel, I think pretty typical of a lot of Democrats in Congress. And, you know, I work over here in West Palm Beach on the east coast of Florida, which is very deep blue territory in the state. But if you drive across Alligator Alley or Route 80, you get to some deep red country over in Southwest Florida, Zach Anderson country. That's where Zach works. And Zach, tell us, what are you hearing from Republican members of Congress over there in response to the Mueller report?
Yeah, things look a little bit different over here on the west coast of Florida, particularly in Southwest Florida. We have red tide, and we also have red lawmakers, more conservative lawmakers over here, like Greg Stube. You mentioned, George, that there's three Florida Democrats who sit on the Judiciary Committee. Stube is a Florida Republican who sits on the Judiciary Committee. He's a freshman, and he's a staunch defender of Donald Trump. And so no surprise, after the Mueller report, he released a statement that said, You know, today's principal conclusions on the Mueller report from AG Barr prove what real Donald Trump has said all along. No collusion. Now I hope that Democrats in Congress will stop their endless investigations and we can move forward. So Republicans, to no surprise, are rejoicing. You know, they've been sick of talking about the Mueller report hanging over President Trump. And now they're kind of going on the offensive. You know, Marco Rubio, Rick Scott, two Republican senators in Florida, both say it's time to move on. And they're also echoing Donald Trump and going after Democrats and criticizing them for pushing this and harping on this. You know, Lois Frankel has talked about moving on. And I think Republicans want to dwell on this a little bit and hammer Democrats a little bit and say that they have been too focused on this Mueller report. I think they see some political advantage in it right now. So, you know, this is an issue that I think the is kind of flipped a little bit from being an issue that Republicans were on the defensive on for a long time to an issue where Republicans are a little bit on the offensive going forward.
Yeah, for sure. And interesting, just the concept of moving on, the liberal group Move On formed 20 some years ago in response to the Clinton impeachment, urging America to move on from that topic. And now kind of the phrase is coming up again.
Yeah. Well, now Move On is going to be taken over by the GOP.
Right. And now let's speaking of moving on, let's move on to Tallahassee. I hear that swamp rock music playing. Sounds like CCR's Green River to me, but it's a royalty-free number called Swamp Rock. And when you hear that, you know that John Kennedy, our man in Tallahassee, is going to bring some gravitas. John is going to tell us about E-Verify. You know, E-Verify is one of those things where Republicans like to talk tough on immigration, but applause lines on the campaign trail don't always translate into actual legislation, even in a place like Florida, where you have Republican governor and a Republican controlled legislature. And John Kennedy did a story recently about this E-Verify issue. So explain to us a little bit about what's going on with that issue.
Yeah, sure thing, George. You're right. It's funny how politics can turn. And, you know, an example of it is the shot that Ron DeSantis took at Republican primary opponent Adam Putnam in their Fox News debate last year. Well, that looks like it's ricocheting back at the new governor. Immigration, of course, is a potent issue in any Republican campaign. And DeSantis had accused Putnam of caving to powerful business and agricultural donors who opposed being required to use E-Verify. That's the federal database that checks whether new hires are legally eligible to work in this country. Here we have a little bit of sound from DeSantis going after Putnam in that August debate.
When we had a chance in Florida to do E-Verify, which is the number one thing you can do to shut off the job spigot, it would raise wages, increase the rule of law, and be good for taxpayers. He twisted arms in the state Senate. He helped kill it behind the scenes. So I appreciate he's saying to put Florida first, but he didn't put Florida first there. He put his big donors who want cheap foreign labor ahead of the interests of our citizens.
That's like a flamethrower going out over Fox News for DeSantis. But now, 7 months later, DeSantis has done nothing publicly to support E-Verify legislation that now is stalled in the House and Senate. And the governor basically is acknowledging that it likely will go nowhere this year. Now, the Florida business groups, including the Florida Chamber of Commerce and farming interests, which are major contributors to the state Republican Party and to individual lawmakers, they remain opposed to this legislation that would make all employers use the federal database before putting anyone on the payroll. But no surprise, when I recently asked DeSantis if he was surrendering to special interests, just as he accused Putnam of doing, here's some of what he said at a recent news conference.
I'm supportive of E-Verify, but we need to make sure, you know, we need to figure out a way to get it across the finish line. So, you know, I have 4 years. I'd like to do it this session, but if we don't, you know, we'll have an opportunity. But yeah, it's not any community winning out over me. I ran on it. I'm in favor of it. You know, we've got a lot of irons in the fire in this session, and we want to deliver on the things that we can. And this will be one that I'm not going to quit on. But, you know, you look at this stuff, and the fact is that I didn't even have unanimity within the Republican Party on this. And I think the Democrats, for whatever reason, have really gone left on illegal immigration. So we'll be in the fight on that for sure.
Yeah, though it doesn't sound like he's going to be in the fight this year. So, you know, after saying 7 months ago, vowing that he would sign into law E-Verify legislation, looks like that's going to be a work in progress here going into future years. Now, cracking down on undocumented immigrants, though, remains a powerful talking point in this legislative session for Republicans, and bills that would prohibit so-called sanctuary cities do have DeSantis's support, and they are advancing in both chambers. And here's how DeSantis sees that with more of his comments from that same news conference.
The sanctuary cities thing, to me, you know, I think that's a no-brainer. I mean, look, we're going to comply. If somebody, you know, is in our court system and there's a detainer that has been put on by the federal government, well, that should be honored. You shouldn't be jettisoning working with collaboratively with the federal government. And that's just a way to help keep communities safe. So I'm definitely committed to doing that as well.
You know, many, though, seeking stricter immigration enforcement, they say that this doesn't go far enough, the sanctuary cities legislation. It makes local governments comply with federal detainers that can result in the deportation of criminal aliens. But by contrast, I guess E-Verify can remove the lure of getting a job for many undocumented workers. And a lot of people see that as a much stronger step. The hardline Floridians for Immigration Enforcement, they just tweeted last week in support of E-Verify. They said, quote, "We need legislation to make it mandatory for all employers." But then advocates for the immigration community, they say it's clear that the governor and GOP legislators are avoiding confrontation with big donors by letting the E-Verify legislation lag, but push the sanctuary cities ban that can satisfy a conservative voting base. You know, records show that no Florida cities or counties authorize resisting federal detainers. And that leads many questions to people really to question whether the sanctuary cities ban will really have much of an impact. But critics also have condemned both things, the E-Verify and sanctuary cities, as being very divisive. Now this is sort of a little bit of a familiar story in Florida, too, because DeSantis's predecessor, former Governor Rick Scott, now in the U.S. Senate, he also talked about using E-Verify, but limited its use to state government agencies after drawing a firestorm of opposition from farming giants and tourism industry officials. These are a lot of the organizations that rely on cheap labor, including undocumented workers. So it's a familiar Republican story in Florida. You know, talk big during the campaign about cracking down on undocumented immigration, but once elected, you know, you listen carefully to the industries that rely on this labor and that finance Republican political campaigns, and they really don't want tough regulations imposed on them.
Yeah, it's kind of a interesting illustration within the Republican Party of that divide between the business interests and you know, kind of the Republican primary voting base that you know wants a crackdown on illegal immigration. Interesting illustration there of some of just the political
tug of war. Yeah.
So you mentioned the sanctuary cities legislation, and we've talked about that before. So you know, and it may or may not be. I mean, there aren't any sanctuary cities per se in Florida right now, but that appears to be moving forward. And Zach Anderson, you have been reporting on some new controversy surrounding that. Tell us a little bit about what you've been looking at.
Yeah, so this idea of cracking down on sanctuary cities has been highly controversial. Immigrant rights groups have come out and said that you know, this would hurt their community. And one of the big criticisms is that it's a racist policy. It's just targeting Hispanic people, which supporters adamantly deny. And they say it's about enforcing the rule of law. But the sponsor of the sanctuary city bill, Joe Gruters, he's a Sarasota Republican, also the chair of the Republican Party of Florida, gave critics some fuel recently It was revealed that he was working with some groups that have questionable backgrounds. The News Service of Florida broke a story this week that Grutter's office had been in contact with some groups that were branded by the Southern Poverty Law Center as hate groups. And I did some follow-up reporting on that yesterday and got some emails to confirm that. Several people associated with the group, the Federation for Immigration Reform, were in contact with Grutter's office through email and actually met with him in his office. The reason that's controversial is because the Federation for Immigration Reform, their founder, John Tanton, made some very incendiary statements about race. He said, as whites see their power and control of their lives declining, will they simply go quietly into the night, or will there be an explosion? He also said that I've come to the point of view that for European American society and culture to persist requires a European American majority, and a clear one at that. And lastly, one more quote from him. He said, projections by the U.S. Census Bureau show that midway into the next century, the current European-American majority will become a minority. This is unacceptable. We decline to bequeath to our children minority status in their own land. And the Southern Poverty Law Center website says, you know, this statement made it quite clear that the skin color of immigrants factored into his desire to limit immigration. Now, the Southern Poverty Law Center has been extremely criticized by conservatives who say that it unfairly tarnishes mainstream conservative groups. And this Federation for Immigration Reform says right on their website that we do not believe in discrimination, and our views are not based on anybody's skin color. But the Democrats were quick to pounce on some of this reporting. The Florida Democratic Party came out and put out a statement. The chair of the party, Terry Rizzo, said that Senator Joe Grutter's, who is the chair of the Republican Party of Florida, allowed a far right hate group to write a bill that would tear apart immigrant families and destroy communities across our state. She also said that Grutter's is literally allowing one of the most toxic groups in our country to write our laws. And this is shocking. So, some see this as sort of a last ditch attempt to sideline the bill. I don't think it will sideline the bill. I think this is on a fast track, and that the involvement of these groups has been tangential enough that, they can distance themselves from that. And Grutter says that he never got any indication that these groups had any hateful motives. And, they sort of were very tangential to the bill, that this is a bill that has been around for a long time. He just took an old bill and filed it so that they didn't really have any input in writing the bill, he says. Just one more controversy over a bill that has been extremely controversial.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center and some of the controversy around them. And I don't know about the particular group you mentioned, but it is worth noting the Southern Poverty Law Center, which does have a long, proud history, has been accused of kind of jumping the shark in recent years. I mean, they even had Ben Carson on their like extremist watch list, and I think Rand Paul, and
they kind of came to prominence in the 70s and 80s for going after the Ku Klux Klan and some, really sharply racist groups, white supremacist groups. And in recent years, they focused more on issues like immigration and other things. And people have said that, the groups that they're targeting are much more mainstream groups. This group, Federation for Immigration Reform, I mean, their members have testified before Congress. They are this guy who founded it. The statements that he made were a long time ago. They've been around for 40 years now. So you could argue that, that they are a lot more mainstream than the Southern Poverty Law Center is saying. And the Southern Poverty Law Center, as you said, has had some issues lately. They actually even settled a defamation lawsuit last year for $3.4 million. They admitted it was wrong. They were wrong to brand a group, a Muslim extremist group. So plenty of material for folks to push back against them.
Speaking of sanctuary cities, there was a Florida Atlantic University is out with a fresh poll on voter attitudes in the state. And there, I think there was a sanctuary cities question on that. What did FAU find on that issue, Zach?
Yeah, it's sanctuary cities is a popular issue. It's one of the reasons that Republicans are pushing it. The governor Ron DeSantis even mentioned it after his State of the State speech that, you know, he thinks this is like a no-brainer, that even a lot of Democrats support this issue and that it's really only the liberal elite that's against it. And to some degree, he's right. 46% in this latest FAU poll of Florida voters support banning sanctuary cities, and only 34% oppose it. The rest are undecided, but that's still a 12-point margin of people who support it versus those that oppose it. And I went and looked at the crosstabs. 26% of Democrats support a sanctuary city ban. Now, it's not a majority of Democrats, as Ron DeSantis said, but it is a significant number of folks who are leery of not having their communities fully cooperate with federal immigration enforcement.
And that FAU poll also had good numbers for vouchers. And again, you know, these are all a matter of how you ask the question and how you, and then the issue itself, how you present it to voters and everything. But that found, I think, 52% support for vouchers, an idea that DeSantis has pushed, but it found disapproval, I think 38% approval and 50% disapproval for the idea that the governor supports of allowing teachers to have firearms in the classroom to protect schools.
Also found a majority of people support a ban on fracking, not a majority, but a plurality, 49% of people versus 39% opposed. Most of the issues that the Republican legislature is pushing, or at least most of the issues that were polled by FAU, have more people support them than oppose them. So it's interesting, even the controversial issues like sanctuary cities or vouchers that Democrats sharply oppose, they have significant support, according to this FAU poll.
Well, with all that number talk, I think I hear the House band firing up that funky royalty-free music again. There it is. It's time to return to our Pick a Number segment. Let's go lowest to highest. John Kennedy, you had the number 4 from Tallahassee. What does that number mean?
That's right, George. I had 4, which is the difference in the number of pages between the state house budget proposal, 420 pages, and the Senate's 424-page document. Oh, and there's also about $400 million in differences between the Senate's $90.3 billion budget and the House's slimmed-down version, which is $89.9 billion. Now, committees in the two chambers just approved their spending plans this week, and both sides are scheduled to hold floor votes next week, and they'll pass the bills. So that'll be right around the midpoint of the legislative session, and now the real negotiations begin. The more conservative House is the tighter spender. They want to cut money for universities, allowing for a smaller increase in public schools and less money for the water cleaning efforts that Governor DeSantis wants. But it's got to the point in the House Budget Committee that Democrats, this was kind of strange, Democrats were arguing Governor DeSantis's side, given that the Republican governor's budget proposal, he's at $91.3 billion in what he's proposed. That was released earlier this month, and he's the biggest spender of all. So Democrats kind of see sort of an ally in the governor in this case. The Republicans spend freely, but much more on all of the above that we spoke about than the House does. And then everyone that really matters in this budget deal are Republicans. But clearly, you have something of a wide array of approaches and, you know, expectations out of state government. So we're only at the beginning. It's the governor's first session. And one question that is to watch is, you know, will he get rolled by those in his own party? There's a lot more to talk about before this final budget document goes to the printer.
Very good. More numbers to come, more strong numbers to come like that one. 60, Zach Anderson.
So 60% is the amount of voters required to pass a constitutional amendment in Florida through a ballot initiative. And that's about the only thing that would not change about the ballot initiative process under bills that are being put forward in the legislature. They would keep the 60% threshold, but they would change almost everything else about the process of passing a constitutional amendment by voter referendum. And we've talked on this show about how voter referendums have been popular for going around the legislature, whether it was medical marijuana, Amendment 4, the Felon Voting Rights Amendment, Amendment 1, the Land Conservation Amendment. All these have been passed not by the legislature, but by voters, and often with opposition from the legislature. Well, state lawmakers have not been that happy about this, that the voters have been able to go around them. And so they're putting forward some bills that would very much change the process for getting these passed. You would keep the 60% threshold, but there would be all sorts of other obstacles for people. Right now, amendments are gathered oftentimes by paid petitioners, some of them coming from out of state, who go around the country and do these ballot initiatives all over the country. This bill that is expected to pass the Florida House this week and is up in the Senate next week would require that these petition signature gatherers be Florida residents, and they couldn't be paid based on the number of petitions gathered. So that would be a big change. I mean, people like John Morgan financed the medical marijuana amendment by paying petition gatherers per signature. It would also require the state to estimate the amendment's impact on the state and local economy. It would also require that you put the name of the initiative sponsor on the ballot amendment, and if there would be an assessment to see if it would result in higher taxes or reduced funding for state programs. You'd have to put that statement on the ballot if it's possible that it could be a cost to the amendment. So a lot of changes, all of them designed to make it harder to pass these and to, the Republicans are saying to educate voters more so that they understand the ramifications of these amendments. But they believe by educating them that it will peel off some of the support for these amendments. And it's important to note that these bills would apply starting, immediately, starting this year. So they would apply to the amendments that are currently in the process, such as an effort to increase the minimum wage in Florida to $15 an hour, and also an assault weapons ban in Florida. So 60%, that threshold wouldn't change, but everything else about the amendment process would change, and it could have a big impact on whether voters can go around the legislature in the future.
Legislature doesn't like to be preempted by voters or anybody else. My number was 89. That was Wayne Messam's jersey number when he played wide receiver at Florida State and won a national championship under Bobby Bowden in the early 1990s. Who's Wayne Messam? Well, he is the mayor of Miramar in Broward County, and he's a native of the Glades region of Palm Beach County. And he recently declared that he is a Democratic candidate for president. He is actually the second Division I college football player in the presidential race. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, a lot better known than Wayne Messam, he played tight end for Stanford. And while Booker is better known, Messam had the better college football career. He caught 62 passes and 4 touchdowns at Florida State. Cory Booker had 20 catches and 1 TD at Stanford. Well, that wraps up another one of our Inside Florida Politics podcasts. I am Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett. As always, it has been my honor to host the podcast, and I've been joined by Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy in Tallahassee and Sarasota Herald Tribune Politics Editor Zach Anderson. I've been assisted here in the West Palm Beach studio by Corzano. That's the team of Thomas Cordy and Joe Forzano, and always making it happen from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, the Gatehouse Digital Audio Production Director, Adam Fish. Thank you.